This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
It's time for our Monday serial, a respectable veneer written by Rachel Doré, published by Upstart Press and narrated by Romy Hooper. This serial has been made possible by funding from the Earl Creativity and Development Trust with collaboration from Manawatu People's Radio. A Respectable Veneer is a story about love and courage, but we remind you of our regular content warning. There are elements of violence and references to child abuse. After Ruby's night out with Janice, she returns, only to face her worst fear. The thug and child trafficker Lou Watkins has turned up at the house, falsely claiming to be Edie's father. When Douglas and Frank sent him off, he swore he'd be back, and he'd take Edie with him.
Douglas was sitting at the kitchen table.
Janice not coming in.
She had to get back. Ruby took off her coat. The atmosphere in the kitchen seemed odd. Nothing detectable. Nothing as tangible as an odour. Douglas's posture on the chair looked posed. His face taut. "Has Edie been good?" she asked. "Did she go to bed without any trouble?"
"Percy kept her entertained. We pulled out a few of Frank's old books."
His report lacked warmth.
"We had great fun."
Great fun. The words fell like stones down a deep hole. "Oh, good. Thanks."
Don't thank me,"
he said rather curtly, without looking at her.
"Now we're married. As long as you haven't committed bigamy or anything, I'm practically her stepfather." "I am, aren't I?"
What an odd thing to say. What's going on? He deflected her question.
"Good film."
"Roman Holiday, with Gregory Peck. Is Frank in bed already?"
"Yes. He had to take a couple of pills. It's all been a bit much."
"I'm sorry?"
"Sorry? What for? Shall I make tea? Or would you like something else?"
He didn't wait for an answer.
"Ruby, sit down."
At his elbow stood an empty glass, a trace of amber at the bottom of it. Something was wrong. She remained standing.
"While you were out at the cinema with Janice,"
his eyes narrowed,
"we had a visitor. Some seedy-looking fellow turned up at the back door asking for you."
Shards of ice splintered in Ruby's chest and plummeted to her gut.
"He asked if Edie was here," Douglas said calmly.
There was no trace of a stammer.
"We said she'd gone out with you for the evening, visiting a friend."
She lowered her eyes, regretting not changing Edie's name to something different. Joan, Barbara, Moira, anything.
"Ruby, this fellow is claiming to be Edie's father."
Her knees dissolved. She almost fell onto the chair. If Lou Watkins was going around using that story, he could easily canvass the schools. He might have already started touting his story, how his deranged whore of a missus had run off with his beloved little girl. Ruby knew the score. Like most men in authority, any headmaster would take a man's word over a woman's, even that of a seedy-looking character like Lou.
"This fellow said he'd be back."
Douglas's words were dry tinder.
Franks told me everything.
Her mind swung wildly. She couldn't capture words to put in her mouth. At last she had to let her breath out and gulp some air. When she was ready to speak, her tongue was stuck behind her teeth.
"Haven't you got anything to say?"
He leaned back in his chair, arms folded. I...
Go on. Let me hear your side of it.
Her side of it? It was a mess, locked inside her.
Well, he said.
When at last she delved past her dread, she saw contempt set on his face. If he heard her out and wanted her to go, where would that leave him and Frank? Risking everything, she began. The first halting words and stammers unblocked a torrent, confessing everything she'd hoped he'd never find out, starting with the fish and chip newspaper that bore the news of Angel's murder, winding back to what came before that. Words tumbled out, disordered and hardly making sense. The run to the train, the dance halls Mo ran where Ruby was sent to meet men, Rat's Nest, what Lou Watkins was, and poor, broken Winnie. The short nights with Angel. Mo taking Edie to be photographed. The soldier who raped her. Mo's business operations, and ending with Angel overhearing Mo making a deal with a man who was ready to buy Edie. How Angel helped them escape. The risk Angel took holding money back from Mo. The gift of her savings in the sock. And the appalling price she'd paid for helping Ruby and Edie get away. When the jumbled history reached its end, she'd spilled more than she'd told Frank. Things she had not allowed near the front of her mind. Douglas listened, his expression unreadable, eyelids shuttering his gaze. Only the flex of his neck and the veins in his temples betrayed the turbulence of his emotions. Eventually, he opened his cigarette case and held it out to her. She shook her head. How could she take anything from him now, even a cigarette? The manacles of fear and humiliation gripped her. He tapped the end of the cigarette on the silver case before lighting it.
"That it?"
he said at last. "There's..."
I've heard enough," he said. "But what you've told me, that's the truth?"
How blindly vain she'd been, thinking she could rise above it all. Now her well-meant intentions had ended up contaminating everyone. "Do you want me to take Edie and... go?" Her voice broke.
"No need for that."
"What shall I do?"
I don't know."
His eyes flashed open.
"What I don't understand is why the blazes you didn't trust me enough to tell me before. Why did I have to hear it from Frank?"
How could she tell him she hadn't wanted him to know her story? That she felt a love for him she couldn't understand herself? That she didn't want him to ever look at her the very way he was looking at her now. "The other night, when I asked for a drink..."
"Yes?"
He swiveled sideways in the chair, his cigarette held out between two fingers, crossed his legs and leaned back as though to distance himself from her. "I thought whiskey would help," she said. "I was shaken up. I thought I'd seen him in town."
"Christ!"
He jumped up, stubbing the cigarette in the ashtray and stood scowling at her.
"In town? Christ! If you'd been honest, told us all this earlier."
Defending herself, telling him that she hadn't meant to be dishonest, was a waste of time. "What would you have done?" Her ire rose. Gone to the police? Have it all out? His word against mine? Everyone would have believed him, simply because he's a man. In this world, unless you're a respectable somebody, a man can be a monster, the worst of liars. Say anything he likes to get his way, and the police and everyone else will take his side of things. Douglas ran his hand over his mouth, his eyes roving as though searching the air for a rebuttal and not finding one. Do you know what will happen to Edie if he gets hold of her? She added hotly. Do you? Can you see?
Frank said something to that effect, he said, shaking his head. I just find it hard to fathom how such things go on. I mean, how could anyone here in this country?
You wouldn't want to know what goes on, she said.
To hell with it. I'm going to get Frank's whiskey. Get another glass down.
He poured more than she thought he would.
Anything in it?
He asked, holding her glass up.
No. As it comes.
In the distance, a train whistle penetrated the night. She'd become so used to the sound of the trains that she'd stopped hearing it. On this clear, still night, the sound reaching her was a reminder of her options.
Edie and I could leave, she said.
And while I'm out playing Bon Brushman, what if this bastard comes and deals to Frank?
The Glenfiddich burned its way down. At least her body was capable of feeling something. Douglas surprised her by gulping his drink down and pouring a second that followed the first.
We're rather stuck, aren't we?
I don't know what to do, she said. I'm frightened.
He sipped the whiskey pensively.
You've rather painted yourself into a corner. And us along with you.
Ruby lifted her head.
I'm sorry.
Yes, well.
He downed the last half inch.
Nothing we can do right now. Going over and over it won't get us anywhere tonight. There's no point.
There's no point. She was alone, wasn't she? With those three words, Douglas had put a seal on the predicament and distanced himself.
Whatever we decide tomorrow, whatever happens next, there will be repercussions, won't there?
He left the glass on the table.
I have to get to bed. I can give you one of Frank's pills if you like. It may help you get some sleep.
She didn't want a pill. More than anything, she needed to be held. She needed comforting. The soft shell that was her skin felt as though it had begun to break apart, and she ached to be held together with a velvety embrace. But Angel was gone. The stench hit her as soon as she opened the door. As dead as she felt inside, at least her nose was working. She turned on the light. The kitten was a tiny ball of shadow grey on her bed.
You wretched bloody thing, Ruby whispered.
Her fingers touched the softness of the fur, the loose scruff of the neck, and the line of bones vulnerable under her hand. The motor of its purr started up. People usually grabbed the offender and rubbed its nose in its poo to teach it better manners. She'd have to find the pile first. It would be easier to strangle the damn creature instead. All she saw in the box of sand Douglas had provided was a small damp patch. Her nose told her the kitten's business wasn't under the beds. Sniffing all the way to the sewing room, she saw a piece of fabric had been pulled from the top of the pile to the floor. There. Gathering up the cat's shit with wads of toilet paper, looking for white vinegar to put in a bucket of water to clean the floor, and standing over the laundry tub, washing a piece of rather good woolen cloth, was not how she'd imagined spending what was left of the night. She left the cloth soaking in the tub with diluted vinegar. Still, Lou Watkins had not been in her mind for at least an hour. Small mercy. How many times had the clock in the passage chimed an hour? She tiptoed past Edie's bed and raised the blind a little. Morning would break before long. The silhouettes of trees would soften to shades of green. The light would stroke Edie's sleeping face and make an undulating landscape of her form under the lilac bedspread. As she went to turn off the light, the kitten lifted his head and blinked at her prettily. "Damned wretch," she said. In the dark, she felt paws pad up the line of her body, and Percy settled himself on her neck and shoulder, purring. The small, soft body with its rhythmic rumble comforted her. Vinegar lingered in the air, and somewhere, in the deepest recesses of her nostrils, she was sure she could still smell feces. It sounded like the wind, the soft groaning of branches tormented by the elements. When Douglas had taken them for that Sunday drive, it seemed so long ago, and Edie was carsick. He'd pointed out trees that had given up resisting the blasts and grew lopsided, one side sheared at an angle as if by a ruthless cutter. This sound had not come from outside. It was from the bedroom next to hers, where the men slept. It wasn't the usual muffled noises that came through the wall. She'd become used to that. These were guttural moans, alarming and violent. The kitten tumbled off her as she sat up. Douglas's voice, scarcely discernible under the moans, was drowned out by an animal roar of pain and horror. She thought of Angel. Whatever Lou did to her, had she made those sounds? How long did she moan before she died? Or did he finish her off before he walked away? The sounds coming from the next room, mingled with her castigations and imaginings, shredded her nerves. She was part of that agony. It was part of her. Douglas's voice was trying to break through. "Please, Frank. Shh, shh, shh. Wake up, Frank. It's me, my love. Dougie. Your Dougie's here." The moan gave way to garbling and whimpering, incoherent pleas. "I'm here, Frank." Douglas's voice, louder. "Come on, old man. It's just a dream, dear. We're here, Frank, here at home. I'm here." A deep-throated, electrifying scream filled the air. Ruby looked across at Edie. She hadn't stirred. The next scream slid into muffled sobs. Then all went quiet. She heard a door open and the sound of Douglas coaxing Frank as they made their stumbling way down the passage to the bathroom. There was more sobbing. This time, Frank's voice, thin and rasping. "You won't leave me, Dougie, will you?"
"Never."
Long after she heard their door close and the house went quiet, she stood, her bare feet nailed to the floor, her mind careering about between her fears. Frank's anguish brought home to her the peril she'd put the pair of them in, and the dread of Lou Watkins getting hold of Edie. What might happen when he turned up again? Lou wouldn't waste time going from one school to another until he found where she was. He'd assume she went to the one up the road and tell the headmaster he was there to collect his little girl. When that failed, he wouldn't know which school to try next. No. Lou would act fast. Now he knew where they were. He wouldn't give her time to take Edie and run. He knew that she had help now, too. Run. She had a little more money than she'd started with. That gave her options. Janice might drive them somewhere. They could catch another train, and another, start again. But life on the run with Edie would be unbearable for both of them. No. Lou would be back. Could she count on Frank and Douglas to defend her? Frank wasn't up to doing anything physical. Douglas? Gradually, feeling crept back into her. She shoved the dratted kitten off her bed and climbed back under the covers. Douglas had warned her about Frank's nightmares. She should have known. It was just as well Douglas was there. Frank was wiry, but tall and big-boned. She doubted she'd be able to pick him up if he staggered and fell. From the sound of it, Frank had been thrashing about. She could never have soothed him as Douglas had. What could Douglas ever have expected from her? Thinking about it, she decided they were damned lucky she'd come up with a solution so Douglas and Frank could be together. Or had everything somehow been mapped out for her? She couldn't have foreseen the trouble she'd brought to their doorstep. On the other hand, they could be grateful to her. Yes, grateful. A thin blade of daylight glimmered under the blind, and her eyes closed.
You've been listening to A Respectable Veneer, a serialized novel by Rachel Doré, read by Romy Hooper. Listen to the next episode at 8 p.m. next Monday, or for the rest of the series, go to npr.nz/show/respectableveneer, or search for A Respectable Veneer wherever you find your podcasts.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.